Hello, Hey Boomer listeners. I am your host, Wendy Green, and every week I make a promise to you about what you will see and how you will be inspired on the Hey Boomer show. I've promised that you will be inspired maybe to feel how relevant you really are. I promise that you will be inspired to expand your ideas of opportunities that are available to you in your 60s, 70s, 80s, and even beyond. I promise that you will also be inspired by some of the educational content that we're going to cover, and that you will be inspired to recognize ways that you can find your inner peace and that you can accept the stage that we're at as we age, and still we live lives that are full and engaged. Those are my promises to you as Hey Boomer listeners. And today's show is going to be both educational and give you ideas of ways that you may help promote sustainability in your own communities. That's pretty exciting. All of us have been aware of the human impact on the environment. Some of you may have been involved in roadside cleanups. Some of you may have been involved in tree plantings or in planting certain crops in your garden so that you promote the bees and the butterflies and the birds in a wonderful habitat. I imagine most of you, if not all of you, recycle, and some of you may even compost. We do our best to help in our ways to protect the environment, and yet we're constantly being warned about the impact of climate change and how quickly it's creeping up on us, and we just don't know what to do to help. So with the opportunity of speaking with Dr. Weston Drips, the executive director of the Shai Institute for Sustainable Communities, we get to open our eyes to what is being done to tackle climate change at the research and educational levels, and how sustainability practices are being applied at a community level. Really important. I'm curious to learn more about what we can do individually and collectively to protect the planet for our future. So just a couple of important events to remind you of. October 2nd, big day. October 2nd is the Walk to End Alzheimer's. That's here. The walk here in Greenville, South Carolina is on the 2nd, and it starts at 8:30 in the morning at Fluor Field. You can sign up to be on the Hey Boomer team, or you can sign up to donate at act.alz.org/go-to/Hey Boomer. So help us help eradicate this disease and build up caregivers. The other important event on October 2nd, this one's national, is the Women's March. Here in Greenville, we'll be meeting at One City Plaza downtown, but they're going to be groups of people meeting all over the country to protect women's rights, voters' rights, civil rights, LGBTQ rights. It's voting rights, if I didn't say that already. It's an important day. Here it's 12 to 2. So come out, let your voices be heard, and show that we are very involved in protecting our climate, our rights, and our democracy. Okay. Get off my soapbox there for a moment. If you think that you have friends that would benefit from this conversation today, they're really interested in the environment and climate change and things like that, tag them. Let them know about this. If they can't watch live, they can always catch the rerun, the recording, or they can listen to us on the podcast channels. Those will all be available by tomorrow afternoon, but the recording will be there almost immediately after we finish the show today. So I'm going to bring on Wes. Hi.
Hey, Wendy. So glad to be here and joining all your listeners. Greetings to everyone near and far across the Southeast and around the country from Furman University here in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yay. Glad to have you here. So I'm going to do a brief introduction of Wes. So Wes is the executive director of the Shai Institute for Sustainable Communities. It's a big name. And the professor of Earth, Environmental, and Sustainability Sciences at Furman University, as he mentioned. He has helped lead the university's ongoing sustainability efforts and teaches classes in water resources, sustainability science, and environmental science. At Furman, Dr. Drips is known as a very enthusiastic and engaging teacher, a campus and community sustainability advocate, and a sustainability science researcher. He grew up in suburban Philadelphia and went on to study geosciences at Amherst College, Dartmouth College, and the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And in between degrees, he worked as an exploration geologist in the oil, gas, and water sector, an environmental consultant, a hydrogeologist, and a high school teacher and outdoor educator in the Swiss Alps. Whoa, that sounds like fun.
I miss those days, I won't lie.
I bet. Wes came to Furman in 2005. Before that, he was a researcher at MIT in the Department of Environmental and Civil Engineering and an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. And we are so lucky to have you here in the South, where we don't get that kind of snow that Boston and Wisconsin got.
Now, I said the climate's a little bit different. I won't complain.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. So I had the opportunity to come meet you at the campus and take the tour and was blown away and have brought a couple of people back there and did my best to do my little tour. But I wonder if you would be willing to take us on a little tour while you explain the history and the mission of the Shai Institute.
Yeah, no, I will definitely do that. So I'm going to switch over here. I have the luxury of having a virtual tour available. So we're good?
We're good. Let's go.
All right. So I'm going to zoom in here. Give me 1 second. It's going to kind of zoom into the building and it's going to bring you out to the front porch. So,
so pretty.
Yeah, I'll zoom out here so you can see the view from my office here, which is, I can't complain. So let me say just a few things. First of all, people always get a chuckle out. You mentioned that I was a hydrogeologist by training, and you may have noticed my last name is Drips. So being a guy with the last name of Drips and doing water resources gets a laugh out of many people.
I'm sure it does.
I like to say it was destiny, no matter what they say. Yeah, so like I said, you know, I really enjoyed having you come out to visit the Shai Institute. For those listeners that are on the call, let me just give you a little bit of a backdrop in case you don't know Furman. We're a 4-year private liberal arts institution located about 6-7 miles outside of Greenville, South Carolina. One of the prettiest campuses in the United States. It is absolutely spectacular. Before I get caught up, and I will tell you, we, although a private institution, are very public facing. So you're welcome to come out and take a walk around the Institute, which you'll get a little snapshot here today, but also we have a lake you can walk around, you can walk around the grounds. So that is an open invite for you to come. And if you want to actually take a tour of the facility, the Institute's open from 8:30 to 5, Monday through Friday. And Wendy will provide my contact info at the end via our website that you can reach out to me if you want to take a tour.
It's definitely one of my favorite places to walk around at Furman.
Yeah, so you're looking off the front porch. That we have a traditional kind of classic southern garden off the front that has a koi pond there. And I'm going to zoom back around now and take you and tell you a little bit of the history of the building itself. So to take you back a couple decades, Furman has always had a longstanding commitment to sustainability. And our 10th president was a guy named David Shai, who was really looking to kind of make it one of our kind of strategic priorities here at Furman. And we were one of the early adopters across the South and Southeast. I think we were thinking about sustainability before many other folks were. And there were a whole slew of initiatives that came out of his presidency. One of them was an actual degree program, so you can come to Furman and major in sustainability science. But what I'm going to highlight today is this building that is absolutely gorgeous. It's the prettiest building, I think, on campus. I may be a little bit biased. But David partnered with Southern Living Magazine to do every year Southern Living Magazine does a showcase home somewhere across the United States, across the Southeast. And they had never done a green design home. So I'll give you a little aerial tour across here. But we had a number of tennis courts that were sitting on the backside of our campus that had gotten some use, but not a whole lot of use. And David agreed to donate that land for this project to build a Southern Living green design showcase home back in 2007, 2008, that at the time incorporated all the latest and greatest in green design technologies. So I don't have time for a grand tour, but I'll highlight a few things. You notice that the roof line actually overhangs much further than most roof lines on probably your house at home. This is to take advantage of a phenomenon called passive solar design, where here in the South, when we get the high sun and the southern summer heat that comes in, we like to have to actually block that out. So by having an extended roof line, we keep that sun from coming into our house and heating up our house in July and August so that we have to run the HVAC or the air conditioning kind of 24/7 to keep it cool. But that roof line then allows in the winter, when the sun is a little bit lower in the horizon, for that light then to get into the house and then warm it up in the winter months when we want it to actually warm up. This is a really easy feature that I'm surprised is not caught on as much as you might expect in the development of homes, not only across the Southeast, but really around the country. It's really easy to do in the early kind of development stages. It's hard to extend your roof line once the house has been built. But we incorporate a lot of these kind of elements. So we have passive solar. There are five different solar arrays that are part of the house. And I'll take you inside here in just a second. But we actually generate more power than we utilize. So we're actually a net energy positive home that we generate more energy through our renewables than we utilize in the home itself. The house utilized a lot of, you see the stone is a Carolina stone. So it's locally sourced. The wood was locally sourced. And I'm going to take you in here to the front door. We're going to just take a quick step in. And I'll stop right here at, we left one room in the house to be kind of a little bit of a memory of what the house used to look like. The rest of it's a little anticlimactic in the sense that the bedrooms and the kitchen and stuff have all been transferred into an academic center. So as I mentioned, it was open from 2007 to 2008 as a Southern Living Green Design Showcase home with all the latest and greatest in design features. We had dual flush toilets. We had motion sensors on all the spigots and the faucets. As I mentioned, we used a lot of local stone and a lot of local wood. Our carpets here, this is a cool one, is actually made from recycled fishnets. So kind of a beautiful kind of tiled carpet by Interface Carpets. So throughout the whole house, we utilized that, but we did it very intentionally that when we knew that after the 1 year window, we were going to go ahead and convert it into an academic center. And so that's what we've done. So my office sits in, I think, bedroom number 3, which it doesn't look like a bedroom anymore. But we now have a staff and we run it as an academic center. So you were asking a little bit about the mission and kind of what we've done. I'll let folks kind of just, I'll stay on this picture so you can kind of see what this was the living room. As I mentioned, so the mission, as the name suggests, is to promote sustainable communities. And by communities, I mean both our campus community, which is really what the first, I'd say, 10 years or so of the center had really focused on in terms of improving campus sustainability from our operations, but also our educational piece. And I'd say in the last 2 years, we're doing more when we talk about community, more community at large. So doing a lot more work here in the Greenville area, but even increasingly more at the state level as well. There are three elements kind of to sustainability that I'll highlight more in a second, but I do want to say that we not only think about the environmental side, which you alluded to, Wendy, in the beginning about climate change and things of a sort, but we're also doing a lot in terms of social justice and social equity, which is an important part of sustainability. And then also in terms of economic viability and inclusivity. So we are taking kind of a holistic, I call almost a systems look at things. And the Institute has three centers, a center that focuses on sustainability education, one that focuses on applied sustainability research, and one last that focuses on sustainability leadership. So that's kind of a teaser a little bit on that. And I think I'll stop there. But like I said, I will invite you to come if you want the grand tour, including the farm. We have an organic practice farm and some cabins and a bunch of other stuff. You're welcome to come by for a visit and we can give you a tour.
Yeah, a fabulous organic farm, a place where kids can stay when they're in some kind of research facility with you, right? They stay in those houses.
Those houses actually are part of our housing pool. So that's an intentional living community for second year students or sophomores with a focus on sustainable lifestyle choices.
Which okay. Is cool. All right.
So they aspire to be more intentional in their individual lifestyles.
And a fabulous outdoor classroom. I'm telling you, I went there for this tour and I was ready to re-enroll in college, but
yeah, no, it's I like
just
I
said, me.
I can't do it justice with pictures. I think Wendy, to your point, it's you got to come see it to believe it, but it's gorgeous.
Yes, you do. And Jeanette, it was a Southern Living showcase home. So the architect is not a particular person, right, Wes? It was a whole bunch of people involved.
Yeah, so we did use a local architect in terms of some of the design features, but to your point, Southern Living tends to crowdsource a lot of the construction of these homes. So a lot of the materials were donated. We had different vendors that were local or regional vendors that were doing different elements of the home. So it wasn't like a singular builder came in, built the whole thing. It was kind of, there was a project manager, there was an architect who looked at it, but there were a lot of different vendors and service folks and others that were involved in the actual construction of the home.
Okay, great. So you've mentioned sustainability a couple of times and you talked about social justice and equity, some more buzzwords that are super important. And, I thought it was just environmental science. So how do you differentiate or explain sustainability to a larger degree than just environmental concerns or environmental science?
Yeah, that's a great question. So do you see the donut?
We see it.
All right, awesome. So I'm gonna show you the sustainability donut here as a way to kind of highlight what I mean by sustainability, because you're exactly right. I can't tell you, when I say I work in sustainability, Wendy, I get phone calls and I still all the time of, paper or plastic, what kind of light bulb should I use? Or I want to compost,
right.
Which are all great. Do not get me wrong. Those are all very, very important sustainability issues. And as an environmental scientist or earth scientist, those are near and dear to my heart. But as I mentioned, when I was kind of talking about the different components of sustainability, I think it's important that we take a little bit more broader look at what we mean by sustainability. And so there is a British economist named Kate Raworth, whose donut is pictured here on the screen, that I think actually allows anyone from any discipline and any walk of life to understand kind of what our end goal is and maybe where they might be able to contribute. So I'll give you a very brief introduction to this, and then I'll stop sharing my screen so I can see everyone. We can keep our conversation kind of going. But I like to think of sustainability as what I've called sustainable human flourishing, right? So I think if you look at this donut, The outer layer of that donut is what's called the ecological ceiling. And if you look around that ecological ceiling, these are the fact that we live on a finite planet. So we have a limited number of resources that are going to constrain or contain us in terms of how renewable or how sustainable we can be. And you'll see things like climate change up there, biodiversity loss, nutrient loading with things like nitrogen and phosphorus. These are typically what people think of when they think of sustainability, a little bit heavier maybe on the earth science or environmental science side. But you notice the inner ring of the donut is what is called there the social foundation. And these are kind of quality of life indicators where you look, you see there's gender equality and social equity and political voice and peace and justice, as well as amenities like energy, water, food, health, education, housing, etc. And so if you think of what our goal in sustainability science is look, we want to afford people a good quality of life. It's not about, I think some people think sustainability is like going back to living in thatch huts and eating twigs and berries and all that stuff. And I don't see obviously that happening. And so what we want to do is be able to lift up the world's people to give them a good quality of life, maybe not a Western quality of life, because that would be really hard with the resource constraints, but we are failing miserably on every single one of those pieces of the pie in the Intersocial Foundation when you look at the world's people. And so we want to be able to elevate folks above that social foundation, but we have to do it within the constraints put upon us by that ecological ceiling or the outer part of the donut. So we're aiming for that, what's labeled there, that safe and just space for humanity, that regenerative and distributive economy. That's like the yummy part of the donut. We don't want to be stuck in the hole in the middle, and we don't want to be outside the external. We want to be right there in the middle. And that's a real challenge, right? I mean, it realizes that there are environmental constraints, but there are these social components that we want to meet, and we want to be able to marry those kind of together. So I'll stop sharing there.
Oh, wow.
Come back. But
yeah, I'm taking so many notes because it's like, I want to come to your classes. Yeah, so that is a real challenge to recognize the limitations that we have on the resources, and yet to look globally is what you're talking about there, to be able to provide a quality of life across the planet that will sustain life and food and commerce and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'd say, you know, globally, it really is apparent, but I would say even locally. I mean, if you look at, we are not succeeding on a lot of those inner parts of that donut, even right here in Greenville. You know, we have issues of food insecurity, right? We have some inequity issues that really need to be addressed. So I want to be careful and make sure to say, you know, I think of it in a global context, because that's the end goal, is about, you know, we want all humans to flourish. But I also don't want people to think like, oh, that's someone else's problem somewhere far, far away. We have these problems right here in our backyard. And I'd say wherever you are listening across the country, if you took a close look at your community, there is certainly room for improvement as well. In any of those, and each topic differs a little bit depending where you are.
So did the pandemic affect your sustainability pursuits in the community and at school?
Yeah, I mean, so I think there are a couple components to that. And that's a great question. So I would say, you know, certainly the pandemic, I think, did put an economic, you know, kind of shook up the economic system. And so there was a little bit of scrambling in terms of, so maybe some of what people would see as some of the sustainability issues, they would be, quote unquote, put on hold. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a good example. You know, like, I'm someone who worries about waste a lot, waste generation. Well, when you have a pandemic with a lot of wipes and a lot of masks and a lot of all the stuff and single use utensils, you know, that kind of goes out the window. Our waste probably suffered immensely in terms of all the stuff that was going to landfill that we've been recycling before. However, I would say on the other side, I mean, the other component on, I think the fact that pandemic, if you take time to reflect on what are the lessons learned from the pandemic, I think what the pandemic has really highlighted is just how unsustainable many of our current systems are. Mm. And I'm hoping that's kind of a wake-up call, where if you look at particularly, I mean, there are a lot of benefits to, say, globalization, but there are also a lot of downsides. When there's a disruption in the supply chain, at some point in the supply chain, well, then the cost of resources go up almost exponentially. And we're seeing that happen here. It's, you know, a lot of the price of wood and metal and all these things, I mean, have gone double, triple on it because of that supply chain disruption. So I think that's kind of turn pick. You know, you hear people advocating all the time for like regional economies or more local economies. I think there has been an interest in terms of, hey, if we're going to be resilient, we need to be thinking about maybe sourcing some of this more locally, where we would be more protected from global supply chain disruptions like something like a pandemic.
So what are things that the Shai Institute is doing now within the larger Greenville community to educate and to establish some of these sustainable practices?
Yeah, I mean, so there's, I mentioned that the Institute has three centers, right? And so each center has kind of a slightly different directive in terms of how it's kind of interacting with the larger community or even the campus community. So the first center is the Center for Sustainability Education. Mm-hmm. And I would say that really is the one that kicked off the initial development of what was the Shai Center, now the Shai Institute, was the sense of, look, we need students and others to become more systems thinkers. I feel like in this day and age, there's so much of a pressure to be specialized that you get specialized. Sometimes you don't take the 30,000 foot view and kind of step back and realize that in your effort to be so specialized, you're actually maybe creating bigger problems that you aren't anticipating to see because you only see it from the very narrow perspective. And so the beauty of a place like a Furman that's a liberal arts, this is where the liberal arts education is like the perfect sustainability degree. I think of it almost like the quintessential liberal arts degree, because what we're doing is training students to have really good foundational knowledge from a whole lot of perspectives, right? And that allows them to actually see the interconnectivity between things like climate change, racial inequity and discord, economic volatility, right? These are systems that are all interconnected. And if we look at them in isolation, we might not actually be able to solve, you know, maybe fixing it one area creates much bigger problems in another area. So if you can focus our education efforts, I think, on that more holistic kind of systems look, that honestly, there's a huge demand on that. And I think you're going to see more degrees, more programs and stuff coming out that are trying to actually have us go back to a little bit more of a, you know, like the 30,000 foot view, as opposed to the on the ground 1,000, you know, or right. 1,000 or less kind of foot view, so that we can see it as a whole. So that's, so I'm a big fan. I think there's a lot of education still to do. So we do a lot with faculty development, student development, community interaction, workshops for other higher ed institutions and faculty that want to begin to teach this. But it's a rapidly emerging academic discipline in sustainability science, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
The second center is the Center for Applied Sustainability Research. And that really is the more, in this case, is where we've done a lot of great work with the city of Greenville. So how do we look at the city of Greenville? And this can apply to any city that you happen to be in for a listener somewhere else. But I'm sure your city has some fundamental sustainability challenges. I know here in Greenville, we do a lot of work on affordable housing. All right, we have a housing market that is just blowing up right now. And everyone wants to come move to Greenville, South Carolina. It's a hot spot to be.
Right.
But because of that, you know, the real estate market is going haywire right now, and it's causing some real challenges for affordable housing for the workforce, for those that have lived here a long time, but being priced out of their own communities in some way. And so concerns over gentrification that come with those affordable housing challenges as well. Food insecurity, the pandemic, I think, really has put an economic strain on folks. And so we're realizing that, you know, there are, even right here in Greenville, a fair number of food insecure folks that are trying to just get by in terms of where that next meal is going to come through. Eviction data, we're doing some work around eviction now that the moratorium is over, in terms of, you know, how do you keep people in their homes so they're not, you know, as the pandemic has caused a lot of disruption in the workforce, how do we allow people to stay in their homes? So the Center for Applied Sustainability Research has focused a lot of their efforts here on looking at issues of social equity across kind of Greenville. And we work with a large number of nonprofits in the city in that. I would say, you know, we're focusing more on the data analytics on it. We do a lot of data analysis. And I think moving increasingly more into how do we use that data-driven idea to kind of become change agents? How do we actually try to come up with sustainable solutions for our community here in Greenville, kind of in this space?
Okay. And that leads me right into this question from Laura. So we want to be change agents. So what can we do to make an impact locally?
Yeah. And so that's a great question. So I would say, you know, I think sometimes people, well, there's two elements. One is, and we'll get to this maybe towards the tail end about as an individual, what you can do in your own lifestyle and maybe what are the benefits of trying to be more sustainable in your own lifestyle. But I'll hold that one for a minute and say, you know, most cities, City of Greenville being a good example, are developing sustainability plans. Like I said, this is an area that pretty much every major city across the United States has now a sustainability coordinator actually on their payroll, whose job it is to help look for ways to improve the sustainability of that city or that community. And usually one of the first things that gets done is to actually develop a comprehensive sustainability plan for the city. We're working, the Shai Institute is partnered with the City of Greenville to write their first City of Greenville sustainability plan this fall. So we're doing some consulting work to kind of help walk them through that process and come to kind of some actionable items. And I mentioned that in a sense that whenever you have a city that's doing these, they have public meetings, they have public input, they have open houses where you can come as a citizen and share your thoughts. And in fact, as someone who's consulting on that, I would say we value that input more than I think homeowners and city folks really know. I mean, we want this to be a plan that is inspirational and gets the enthusiasm, the excitement of the residents that live kind of in the surrounding area. So I'd say that's one. I'd say, you know, take a look at it. And if you have a climate action plan, if you have a sustainability plan already in place, there's an implementation committee that now has to implement all those things. And you can find your particular topic of interest and help have your voice be heard. On the other piece, I'd say, as you might imagine, there are a large number of nonprofits that are doing great, great work, particularly around or like community activist groups that always are in need of volunteers, whether that's, as you mentioned, Wenny, like whether that's river cleanups around the local area, whether sometimes they're holding rallies, you know, down on a particular issue, whether it's climate change or something else. But I know, for instance, in here, we work a lot. There are a number of organizations working around climate change. So there's a Climate Reality Project group. There's a Citizens Climate Lobby group. There's a Sierra Club group. I think if you are interested in the more activist side and wanting to kind of participate, most of those organizations they're open to membership. You could join. They probably meet once a week, if not more. Once a month, if not more regularly. But it's a great way to network. And I think realize that you have interests and there are other people in your community that have very similar ones. But those are just some of the few. I mean, so depending how active you want to be, or write an op-ed. I mean, I laugh about that, but I've got a lot of retirees that have a little more time on their hand that are passionate about something. You'd be amazed at how, get something in the local newspaper that highlights something that you're passionate about in this space. That would get a lot of attention.
Yeah. So I went to one of the climate action groups rallies once, and I get emails for them all the time. So they're always doing stuff. Do you ever consider teaching a class about this at like OLLI or the Lifelong Learning Institute?
So for those who don't know, so we have a lifelong learning program here at Furman that is extremely active. So if you're here in the Greenville area and you aren't aware of OLLI, definitely look it up. I think they now have more students in their OLLI program than we have undergraduate students here at Furman.
No way.
I think they have upwards of 2,500 or 2,600 students in the OLLI program. Yes. So we work very closely with them. We regularly offer classes. We offered a class on the sustainability donut, a whole 8-part course just last fall that looked at different elements of the donut and sustainability. I'm always doing lunch and learns and things like that for them. So yeah, keep your eye on that. And if you want to reach out to me, I can certainly add you to our newsletter that would tip you off as to when those opportunities are. So that's, we work very closely with them, and that's another great way to get involved.
So tell me about like other sustainability centers or institutes around the country in academic settings. I guess most of them are do you have conferences? Do you collaborate with them?
Yeah. So there is an organization in higher ed called ASHE, the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. It is a national organization. It's actually an international organization because they are now they're open to universities and colleges around the world. They have an annual conference that is in October. I'm actually speaking at it in about a week.
Oh boy!
The work that we've been doing. I'm actually on their advisory board too, so I do a lot kind of with that group. But yeah, they are the leader in the higher ed space about sharing best practices around sustainability education, sustainability curriculum, sustainability initiatives on college and university campuses. I would say the thing that's really cool about sustainability, particularly in higher ed, is, you know, some faculty, I can say this because I'm a faculty member, get very, very protective of their research. And it's, I wouldn't say it's necessarily always the most collaborative. Like they're like, oh no, that's my research. And, you know, they take great ownership and kind of protection of that. In sustainability, I've been so impressed about how collaborative folks are. So if I do something that's really interesting at Furman, I am more than willing to share with another institution that wants to replicate it or do something different. So it's a very tight-knit community sharing, collegial kind of environment that makes it so much fun to work in. Because again, everyone, it's kind of, we're all in this together, you know? So it's your success at Furman or another institution is, you know, it's mutually beneficial that we have to kind of all work together to kind of do that. And so I love that about it. I probably take a call a week from another institution that saw a program that we do that wants to launch something similar and says, you know, can you share some resources? Can you share some best practices? Can you share your lessons learned? And I'm always quick to do that because I've benefited from others doing the same to me. But to get to your question then about, so yes, I would say pretty much every university nowadays has some kind of a sustainability initiative. It might be a single individual that's working in their facilities team around the operations side, but increasingly more, there's a sustainability coordinator that helps on the education side. Some programs are really big. I mean, Furman actually has one of the bigger programs, I'd say, for a small liberal arts institution, because we have that building that I was showing you that we can have.
I love that.
Having a physical space is so nice. Mm-hmm. But there are other universities that have research divisions that are focused on kind of sustainable solutions. It's surprisingly more common and prolific than I think most people realize. And then I think there are other efforts. There are organizations that are working across higher ed. There's a great movement called the Drawdown Movement that you can look at that looks at solutions to climate change. And I know that they work very closely with a lot of research institutions and higher ed institutions about trying to move the needle on implementing some of these proposed climate change solutions. I know the UN does a lot of work with the Sustainable Development Goals. So that's another area that there's a lot of collaboration in terms of trying to have higher ed, move the needle on some of those efforts as well.
So let me ask you, Wes. I mean, it's finally kind of coming together that there's so much more to sustainability than just the environment. There's so many social justice pieces to it, and yep. I mean, it is so interconnected. What's a win that you feel like you've had in the time that you've been at the Shai Institute to kind of merge all of that together?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I think one of our flagship programs, so we have a student fellowship program that I'm very, very proud about. We fund about 30 students a year to work on a combination of campus and community sustainability efforts. I won't focus on the campus side because I think that to your point in terms of that win, is our summer fellowships partner with local organizations across Greenville to help provide them a student with some background and expertise and kind of sustainable thinking to help that organization kind of move the needle within their own organization around a sustainability effort. And what I like about it is, you know, they don't really necessarily have the bandwidth or the training internally and they can't afford to hire a new staff, but we can provide them a student for 10 weeks for the summer, working 40 hours a week in that organization on a particular sustainability challenge or effort that is specific to that community organization or community partner. We've run it for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And so it's great. I mean, so it's really developed these, I'd say, long-standing, almost now like, I would say indefinitely, almost like a lifetime partnership where it's benefiting the students because they're getting some real-world kind of practical experience. Mm-hmm. It's benefiting the NGO or the community organization because it's helping actually do real projects that are moving the needle. So it's one of those like perfect kind of win-win situations, which we always look for.
Yeah, I love that.
The second one I'll mention just came to me, which is a community-facing program. So we have a free low-income home weatherization program called the Community Conservation Corps that is a partnership between our local utility, Piedmont Natural Gas, Habitat for Humanity, and the Shy Institute. And again, this is like a win-win-win across the board. In a sense, what we do is we manage the program. We work with homeowners across the Greenville area that need some home improvements in round weatherizing their homes. They apply. We go out. We bring student volunteers. So students get some hands-on experience working. Habitat for Humanity helps with the volunteers, but provide the expertise in terms of what actually has to be done at the home. I mean, and this is everywhere from we're putting in blowing insulation. It's not just changing light bulbs. It's like thousands of dollars being poured into this house to really kind of really improve the overall energy efficiency of the home. Mm. Piedmont Natural Gas is helping fund the whole program. So it's philanthropic for them in terms of it helps them because that's less energy they need to generate because it's saving energy. So we win because the students are getting some good experience. We're working with the community. So the homeowner wins immensely. It saves a typical homeowner 25 to 30% on their utility bills.
Wow.
Which if you're living on the edge, you know, that's
A big deal.
That's a really big deal. They can put that to things instead of just your utility costs.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of great examples of those. Sustainability can be win-win-win for all, which is
great. I love that. Yeah. One more quick question. Sure. Jan says, what is your opinion of electric cars considering battery disposal?
Yeah. So electric cars are an interesting one. And I'd say I do see electrification coming. I mean, the fossil fuel era will have to come to a close at some point. As a geologist, I can say that because the rate at which it generates is on geologic timescales. And at some point, whether it's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we will exhaust that supply. So I do see a move to more renewables. And in the case of automobiles, you have to electrify if you're going to then take advantage of solar, for instance, or wind power or some of the other renewables out there. The challenge right now here in the South is, you're only as good as the source of your electricity. So I think a lot of people get an electric vehicle and they're like, yes, I got an electric vehicle. Well, if the source of electricity is coal, right? I mean, you can see that the issue is, yes, it's maybe better than a traditional fossil fuel burning car, but you're only as good as your grid. And so with that electrification has to come renewable energy sources to run the electricity to make it actually fully sustainable. And the battery is tricky. So battery technology is coming along at a rapid, rapid speed. I think we're going to see continued improvements in that. But you're right? No energy source is not free of concerns. And there are a lot of elements that go into a battery that have to be mined on the front end, but then also have to be properly disposed in the back end. So, again, that's that kind of sustainable thinking. It's like we got to think holistically and not get caught up as to, oh, it's as simple as just kind of, getting an electric vehicle. Well, there's a lot that goes into an electric vehicle that we need to be thinking about as well. I do think that's where we're headed. But I will say that it's going to have some growing pains that we need to think about the impact that that will require as well.
So very interesting. I hadn't thought about this source of the energy. So that is interesting. So I want to close with a question that I always ask my guests. And the Hey Boomer audience is interested in ways that we can continue to live fully engaged lives, find their passion or their cause. And so I'm wondering if there are two or three takeaways that you would like to leave for our audience today.
Yeah. And, you know, sustainability is one of those funny things in a sense. It can be very personal, but again, you know, it's hard not to watch the news and see the global impact. So what I don't want you to do is leave with despair, because that, like, I feel that as a sustainability scientist, I'm an eternal optimist. I'm a realist. So I can't like turn a blind eye, but I want to leave you definitely with hope. You know, it's easy to kind of say I'm 1 in 8 billion almost now people in the world. Like, really, why does it matter what I do? I've seen even students kind of fall into that trap of like, it just doesn't matter. Like, there's nothing that I can do as an individual. I'd push back on that and say two things. One, maybe at the global scale, that seems overwhelming. But as I mentioned, at the local scale, it matters. It definitely matters, whether that's in that public participatory end in terms of helping drive that sustainability plan, whether it's being part of some of these NGOs that are out there that are doing great work kind of in this space. I'd encourage you to go get involved, right? Go out there. Wendy, as you kind of mentioned, these organizations exist. They're always looking for new members. And I'd say, take that leap of faith, go to one of the meetings, see what they're about, find the one that fits your passion. And it might not be climate change. It could be like community gardening or something like that, right? There's a lot of opportunity for you to kind of get involved. The second, and then this is where I do think the scalability is, I do think there's a lot of, if you look at your individual lifestyle, I would say if everyone made small changes to their lifestyle, imagine the scalability of that in terms of the overall global impact. It does make a difference. I know that's hard to see sometimes when you're like, I'm just doing my part. But again, if you want to change a culture or create a new norm, it takes that groundswell of a lot of people doing those things to allow that change to actually happen. So I would say, don't be discouraged by that. And if it means like focusing on yourself and saying, I'm going to eat better, and I'm going to look at the impact of my purchasing or things of that, there's a lot to be said in terms of that as a good goal for yourself, in a sense that not only is it good for the planet, but so many of these things are good for you, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's your health or saving you money or these other things, like sustainability choices are a win. They're good on the social side. They're often good on the economic side, particularly in the long haul, and they're good for the environment. And so don't be discouraged by all the doom and gloom that's out there, because it's easy. As an environmental scientist who teaches the data, you know, I don't want to be Dr. Doom. I don't want to be half the world's coming to an end. We got to do it. I want to be a realist and say we have a lot of work to do. I'm not going to kind of fluff it up and make, you know, say turn a blind eye. But I think if we can kind of do that at a personal level and then push, you know, the bigger entities, the industry, our governments and others to do that, it's going to take a groundswell if we're going to move to a more sustainable model. Do matter. I mean, I'd say don't fall into that. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I do. That's just wrong.
It absolutely does matter. And I love that you said this a couple of times. It's a win, win, win. There's not too many things that we can be involved in where you can find a win, win, win. So I think that's amazing and exciting.
No, it is exciting. And again, I think if done right, sustainability should be a win for all. That is the goal. That is going to get us there in that safe and just space for humanity in the donut. That is the win-win.
Awesome.
And it's going to be hard to get to. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. Otherwise, we would have done it a while ago. But that should be the inspiration in terms of where we're headed.
Yeah. So I have your contact information up on the screen, and I'm going to leave it there for a minute while I tell you about who our guest is for next week.
Excellent.
His name is Jim Lauderdale, and Jim is a 2-time Grammy Award winning singer-songwriter. He just released his 34th album called Hope. This album was written during the COVID lockdown, and it's a musical tribute to the attitude of overcoming hard times in a spirit of inspirational healing. Hopeful that he'll be able to play some music for us. I have heard many of the songs on the album. They really are great. Jim is country, rock, bluegrass. He's just kind of, you know, brings it all together. So join us next week for that. That's going to be fun. I thank you all for tuning in today. And I know that you lead busy lives. This is a very important discussion. Thank you, Wes, for being with us today. And help grow the audience. Share this out. I appreciate all the comments that have come through and the questions that came through from the audience. And remember, you are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. My name is Wendy Green, and this has been Hey Boomer.
Are you at risk for stroke or cardiovascular disease? Get screened with Lifeline Screening for peace of mind or early detection. Screenings are painless, easy, and non-invasive. Over 700,000 people per year get screened at Lifeline Screening. Click in the show notes for a special offer for Hey Boomer listeners.